The following interview was recorded in the year 2017 by the Gawler Community Broadcasting Association as part of the Gawler Oral History Interview Project.
Interview with Brian Samble on Monday, the 27th of March 2017. Whoops. Okay, so what we are going to talk about today is a lot of your involvement in motor racing, and due to the fact that I have had a long time involvement with motor racing, even going back to the Two Worlds track, which you will be able to remember, but not that many of the modern people actually know that there was a track at Two Worlds. And I still remember when Malala started up, so I have had an interest in motor racing, although I must confess probably most of the motor racing that I've been involved with has been four wheels. Now, tell me about your involvement in motor racing.
Well, I think I've always sort of been a person. My father was involved in motorbike racing, and always had at a very young age a little thing that used to putt around with a Villiers 160 motor in it around the yard. And then as I went up into life, I started buying mostly Hondas. I was always a Honda person, and but my father had a BSA, and from time to time I used to ride this BSA and just loved the power of it. The weight of it was pretty heavy, because if it fell over, I had to get somebody to help me lift it up.
The modern people would have to do that as well.
Exactly. And so from then on, as I started going up, I started getting involved with the clubs and that around the area. And Gawler itself didn't have an actual motorcycle club. We did a bit of homework on the point of it would be great to have a club in the town. So hence, a few of us got together, including Max Gratz and a few other identities in the town that have been involved with motorcycles all their life. We got together and had a meeting and formed the Gawler Motorcycle Club, and which is still a very active club in this day and age, and very strong competitors. And in the last few years, Andy Hayden, the Hayden name is legendary in the area, did very, very well in the Dakar, which is the race overseas that everybody tries to go and compete in. So basically from there I was involved with scrambles, and as you said about the Two Worlds, I certainly remember the various racetracks around Hamley Bridge, Two Worlds, Port Wakefield, and One Tree Hill. And the One Tree Hill circuit is one that I used to spend most of my time riding on, along with a new one that started up called Brooks Gully, which was out just out at a place called Gomersall, out in the Bross Valley out here. I suppose over the years I had many different types of bikes. I did try sidecar riding at one stage, but just couldn't get the feel, and you had to have a very good passenger to be able to do that. But always with Hondas, so I really got to know them and did my own repairs and that sort of thing on them. Did very well, smashed up a few times, which you naturally, they say you don't become a good rider unless you get smashed up a few times.
You've got to find the limit, don't
exactly,
you?
Exactly, yeah. But my, I suppose the highlight of that was winning the South Australian motocross at Brooks Gully, which is up at One Tree Hill up there. That was a real highlight. It was not only a highlight, but it also gave me the opportunity that Honda Australia, through the Trevina brothers, that were the management ships of those things, and Peter Page, who used to have the dealership of Honda at Elizabeth, actually offered me a full sponsorship. And I suppose that was the start of something big, because they say you've got to prove yourself before you can get anything in this world. That was a real highlight, and I proudly had that trophy at home. From that point, I also started getting involved with road trials, and rode the 24-hour trial six times. And in 1974 was the highest finish, and that was I finished third, and with my teammate Lee Ward, and we were riding Honda 250s in that in 1974. But the 24-hour trial is a very much grueling trial because you ride right through the night and all that sort of thing on them.
Where is that run?
That's held all the way around this area and the Barossa Valley, and it runs in 3 8-hour type runs. Okay. In other words, you're on the bike for the 8 hours and away you go. It's still going today. It's always held the first weekend in July, and certainly now it's become a trial that everybody wants to try and win and so forth. But I look back on it now with the older bikes that I had, which you've got to say they're older compared to the cantilever type suspensions, and I had the shock absorber suspension. Things have changed so very, very much, but also the power. Power of them is something that I just can't believe, you know, sort of thing. So it's great now to sit back and enjoy. Next Saturday night I'll be going down to Gilman Speedway to see the David Parker runs a fantastic speedway down there of just motorbikes, solos and sidecars. And I still go and enjoy and watch and dream of what I was involved with before and so forth, you know.
Yeah, the a guy that I went through national service with is Alan Halley, who lives in Ruchador, but he travels around to all the tracks.
Right.
And he, I don't know whether he's clerk of the course or something like that. He's something big that that flies in, represents the body.
The body, yeah.
And then flies out again.
Oh,
unfortunately,
wow.
I never get to catch up with him when he's in town. But he's mentioned that he's come to Gilman a few times.
Yeah. So. It was interesting. I had the opportunity to, because I've always heard so much about the racing and rallying in Great Britain, I had the opportunity to go over to look into family history in England. And we were driving around England. We saw different signs, and the signs said grass track racing. I thought, this is interesting. We pulled into a garage and said, what's the story with the grass track racing? And he said, well, it's like you call it scrambling over in and motocross over in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And we have it here. And what we do, we have it on different farmers' properties before they then turn their property over to plant their crops.
Okay.
So in other words, the ground is there.
It's going to be dug up anyway.
Yeah, it's going to be dug up anyway. And it was fantastic. We changed their plan a bit to go and see one. But the most exciting thing was that in walking around the pits, this fella came up to me and said, Sambo, because that's my nickname in racing. He said, what are you doing here? And I looked at him, and it was Don Pretty John.
Okay.
And the Pretty John name was very big in speedway racing.
Mm.
And he, for a season, comes back home to Great Britain, and he raced in these events over there. And he said, not one circuit is the same. Basically, they just put rubber markers out, and that's your circuit, and you've got to go on that circuit. He said, it's really exciting where he feels that the racing that's in South Australia and Australia is all now gone to Supercross and it's not the follow the same track every week sort of thing. When I came back, I actually went to the Motorcycle Union, the corporate body, and mentioned about the fact, because there's farmers all over the place that might turn their paddocks over, you know, after a time, that wouldn't it be great to have these different things? And the Gawler Motorcycle Club actually tried it, and it went really, really well until such time as the councils moved in and said, well, we're really sorry, that's farming land, that's not sporting ground. And again, we call the bureaucracy is gone.
Crazy.
Well, the word starts with B, but basically it's sad because one of my businesses that I owned through my career was the Gawler Motorcycle Centre. I started that up. It's still operating today out here on the Adelaide Road.
Is that Mix? Mick.
Mick. No, no, not Mick. The other one out further. Active by Active Motor Wreckers. It's just out by Tiver Road.
Okay.
Out there.
Oh, right. Yeah, that one. Yeah.
In Gawler Honda. It's called Gawler Motorcycle mm-hmm. Centre. Yep. Anyway, it was interesting because what I was seeing was so many young people were coming on, and they were going in and they were buying a motorcycle, but they had nowhere to ride it. So they were riding it illegally along railway lines and around paddocks and things. The councils wouldn't allow them to ride in their reserves. The people that owned the beach areas wouldn't allow them to ride on the sand and the beach, even though the tide comes in and smooths it all out afterwards. In other words, no common sense was prevailing. And it was concerning. And I thought, well, you know, this is one of them things where we've got to give the young people something to do and somewhere to ride, but do it in a professional form so they may be able to forward their career later on. And the farmers' paddocks would be the good thing. But again, that was stopped because of bureaucracies and also insurance sort of thing.
From a safety point of view, I guess it'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Well, it is, if people don't go the right way, but you
would definitely have to think that through. And proves that,
yeah,
particularly if it's a sanctioned race, you would have to meet certain things. And I know one guy that I assessed, WHS or OHS, was the national guy for inspecting tracks.
Oh, yes, yes,
and
yes.
And so... Yeah, I chatted to him in a similar way, but with a totally different focus.
Yeah.
But, that would have been interesting to see what you would do. Unfortunately, the beauty of the unpredictability of it, in fact, increases the risk of it.
Well, it doesn't. I think the trouble is there seems to be so many variety of rules because I take on board what you said about that, but we were mainly looking at the point of getting the young people that have been given by their nana and their pa a little mini bike that might be 50 cc's but probably could do up to 50 k's an hour and so forth, but somewhere for them to ride and then older people or ex-motorcycle riders could teach them the safety aspects and the type of ways that they can jump a bike or take off and stop and everything like that. And it's interesting because when they said, no, you can't do it, I then queried the factor of all of the 24-hour trials and the other road trials that I'd ridden in and said to them straight out, well, how do you approve a road trial that goes through a farmer's paddock that's never been through there before, in and out dead trees and bushes and creeks, and when it rains the creeks flood and all these sort of things, so the track is changing all the time. And I can tell you there was a number of times when in some of the trials, road trials that I rode in, that there was something like about 150 motorcyclists would start the competition and about 20 finish because of the conditions. And only last year, I'm now involved with Acrim, as Graham is with Radio Control, to help on the controls when there's a trial on. And last year's 24-hour trial, where I was on the Gawler Motorcycle Club control point, we had a rider and we'd already made it knowledge to the officials that the riders had to ride under a dead branch of a tree. And it was concerning that if they had happened to have their head in the air, their head and the helmet would hit it. Well, two riders were taken to hospital because of it, and they never stopped. Well, my argument is this, that if you're going to have a trial which is insurance covered by Shannon's and a few of the others that are involved and so forth, that's great, but how are you going to cover every aspect of it? You know what I mean?
That is crazy that was let through.
Yeah, it was,
but yours was stopped. So
we had a number of incidents in the last year's the 2016 where there was a need for ambulances and it rained. something like about 80 mil of rain, so therefore it made a lot of the areas impassable, and all the ambulances weren't four-wheel drive. So the ambulances could not get in to where an ambulance was needed. So it was interesting because out of the report, we were very interested, and certainly Max Kratz, who's a real legend in motorcycling, could not understand that there wasn't a four-wheel drive ambulance available, because none of us know when it's going to rain and change the conditions of these type of things. But
So it appears as though they stop some events, but then they let others through, and they obviously haven't thought it through. I mean, you know, the chances of it raining has to be definitely possible.
That's right.
And to have not have a one of the ambulances being a four-wheel drive, and you would have thought there's enough troopy ambulances around
that you
would have been able to get one from somewhere. And so, yeah, it's interesting now that they're starting to go into a lot of the four-wheel drive ambulances. You see them in the country region.
That's right.
You would have thought you would have been able to get one of those in. But, yeah, as I said, it's bureaucracy gone crazy, and the fact that they stop some things and then they let others through, and they obviously have got, I mean, things like the branch, that's a crazy one.
To me,
from an insurance point of view, that the chances of someone being injured going under a branch would have to be high.
And I think the thing is too, the sidecar riders, where the passenger who does such a lot of tremendous work and keeping that bike in control with his rider, and that sort of thing, quite often is standing, not only that, to be able to stretch his legs and things like that. And it could very well easy any low branches, and that should be definitely taken out of those things. But the other part too, Rod, is that that it's been concerning me probably in the last few years is the factor of the motorcycles that are being produced today. The motorcycles today are some of the most powerful machines. They've actually probably got to nearly being what's called a lethal weapon in the hands of the person that's riding them. The power of some of these bikes is absolutely electrifying, and because the 24-hour trial and a lot of the road trials have actually all been around country roads, it concerns me that because of the speeds that they're doing on these country roads and everything now, that the trial should be moved further out into the country where there's less traffic. I've been urging for a number of years that it move out towards the Burra, the Morgan area, out into the country where there's outback roads that are perfect for doing those endurance rides and all. And nothing has happened, but it's sadly, you quite often hear where all of a sudden somebody said, we'll put traffic lights on the railway crossing because somebody's being killed. It does concern me that these trials and the speed, and there's a number of times now where there's been some very near misses, and also definitely people have hit cars on crossroads where the backtrack roads cross the main roads. A number of the trials that ran last year, I raised the point a number of times that you should not have a trial because it crosses a main road, which is a main traffic road, because the drivers are probably got dust and mud all over their goggles and things like that. They're getting tired, especially 3, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, and these things could happen. So to move it further out, the chances of those things happening are not there, because the country roads, there's nobody around out in those country roads other than the spectators, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, and I guess, once again, they need to think it through. A trial road crossing a main road should be avoided at all costs.
That's right.
And you don't have to be super clever to work that out. I mean, I don't have a lot of experience. I mean, yes, I follow motor racing, but I don't have a lot of experience in the two-wheel stuff. But you would have thought that there's enough back roads. I've done the run out, say, Malalawe. And you can, there's a lot of roads that are that you could just simply close off because no one's going to go along them
That's
for
right.
three, 4 hours and do
the,
that. So
the area from Morgan to Broken Hill, Yunta, Burra. In that area there is some outback roads and some that would really challenge some of these very high-powered motorbike riders and things like that, and really get back to the point of the reliability trial. That's what the words are all about. So it's interesting.
I mean, it should be where the focus is on acceleration and braking and, and cornering. And I don't think they should be going anywhere near a main road unless the main road's closed.
No, and I think the thing that's happening, it's not only with motorcycling or whether it's with car racing, and sadly the death of Clem Smith the other day, it's interesting to see
Clem die?
Yeah, to see what might happen with Malala Circuit. And these areas, with us people, they call them rev heads, and I'm a rev head. I love speedway or anything to do with cars and things. But to actually look at the fact of the committees of these organisations are work so very, very hard. None of them are paid. They're all volunteers. And the trouble is, a lot of them have been doing it, well, since they first thought about a motorbike. And we're not getting people that say, right, I'm hanging up my motorbike, I'll put my motorbike in the shed, I'll just do a bit of social riding, but I'd like to be involved with the club. And the volunteering of getting people involved with the clubs, and certainly to man the controls and to be involved in organising some of the safety aspects and putting up the flags and the signs, that is gradually falling away. Not only with that, with service clubs, with show societies, with all of these sort of things, is that people say, I'll leave it to somebody else. And sadly, that's not what the future wants. The future wants people to get out there and say, I'll give you a hand. And as I said, I'm involved with ACRM, which is the citizens monitoring, and we sort of go to horse trials and things like that. And at the main controls, keep up to date if somebody needs an ambulance, if somebody needs a doctor, if somebody whatever, through our radio communication, we can assist the organisers to safely operate that. And every year, there's a begging as to get somebody to come onto the committee. Now, it's a fantastic thing. You get to go to these events, and guess what? You get in for free because you're working there. You get to see the events and all this sort of thing. But people don't want to take the time. They'd rather sit on the mound and watch somebody else do the flag waving and things like that. And that is a concern, in my opinion, because motorcycle racing is going to be around for a lot longer than ever I'm going to be on this earth, and you, Rod, too. And the thing is, we want to go and enjoy and so forth, but no way the clubs can afford to pay officials to do these sort of things. And that's going to be a little bit of a concern. I've still got three motorbikes. I've got Honda, a 250, and a couple of 125s that we ride on social rides and things like that. Thoroughly enjoy it. Probably certainly don't do anywhere near the things I used to do on the
motorcycle.
And the other thing, I've got a self-starter now where I don't have to kick it. I can just press the button. And so that's why I've still got very much a love for motorbikes and very impressed with what the clubs and groups and all that do. But I am a little bit concerned about some of the things that I see that are happening. I've raised the issue with people and no one seems to listen. And I think after a while that gets a little bit frustrating, because the young ones coming up do need guidance and do need to have control. You have to have control over the way you operate these events. And certainly David Parker at Gilman Speedway is a real credit to the industry of Speedway, and it puts a lot of effort into it. That's where you certainly see some training coming on that we're going to have around for a long time, like they've got in England. All over England there's Speedway tracks doing very well over there. So it's still a very, very popular sport in Great Britain.
Okay, I'm going to go back a step.
Yep.
You mentioned ACRM,
yep.
But I'm going to show my ignorance. Could you please explain exactly what ACRM means and just go a little bit into what it does?
Well, ACRM, Australian Citizen Monitoring Corp or something, I think it's called. But anyway, it's Graham Tucker introduced me into it. And what it is, it's a group of people. It started up when CB radios came out, you know, 10-4, Big Daddy, are you there? And so forth. And what it was is that they saw a need when there was a three-day event on or a motorcycle or a car event or a car rally, that individually around the areas there needed to be somewhere that you could keep in touch with the main control as to how the event was going. So they offered their services, formed the club, as an official incorporated body club, initially back in time, Graham Fisher, who used to own a company called Gawler CB and Auto Centre in Gawler. Graham and his colleagues got together with a lot of radios, went through all the government bureaucracy and formed the actual ACRM organisation. Today, it's operated by a committee of 8, volunteers of 35. So it's fairly big. They do the Adelaide Horse Trials or the South Australian Horse Trials. They do the hill climb, all of the motor racing or motorcycle events, and it's all done. And what they do, not at any fee, but they ask, do request that a donation may be given to them because they've got to keep upgrading their radios and facilities, because they also provide a relay station. So in other words, where the phone won't work or the the repeater is not in the area, they actually own the repeater, put the repeaters up, and all of the circuit of whatever the event is happening, and at the 24 hour especially, because they have 3 repeaters for that one, and they can keep in contact for the whole 24 hours. So it's a great service, again voluntary, again looking for more volunteers, and that's what it's all about. It's a professional radio safety organisation.
I think one of the challenging things with volunteers is that sometimes people have been in a role for a long time.
Yep.
And that discourages others. They sort of say, I don't want to commit the rest of my life to something. And so it's interesting to try to come up with a scheme whereby you're only in a role for a finite length of time. And I think that's a little bit of an answer, but people need convincing of that.
They do, and I think you are spot on what you say there, Rod, because the way ACRM, I'm not sure, it might have even been Graham Tucker, basically said to ACRM here a number of years ago, is that people are not able to go to the monthly meetings and things like that. But what happens is the secretary of the group continues to send out newsletters and information to them. And when that newsletters and information, especially now with computers, they can go on out, flick, 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 and all the information. And it says there, now, we need you. Are you available for this or whatever may be? Now, it's no sin if you can't. But all of a sudden, Rod or Brian might turn around and say, oh, that's the Colin Grove Hill Climb. They need 4 officials, one at the top, one at the bottom, and 2 around the pit. I'll put my name down for that. So you flick it back on the computer, which everything's done nowadays, and so forth, and you put your name down. And I was only talking to the president the other day, Phil Richards, and I said to Phil, do you have any trouble filling the gaps when you've got the, especially the events that go through the night, you know, all night, like the 24-hour trial or the Adelaide horse trials, which used to be in Gawler, called the 3-day event, and so forth. He said, no, now that we've got this new system, it means that not every time Rod might put his name down, Brian might put his name down, Graham might put his name down, and that means that you're not tied, but you're available. And I think altogether we've got 35 that are available, which would never be needed, probably not even for the 24-hour trial, but at least it's a very good organisation. But your point is correct, that with the BMX club, we started up the Gawler BMX Club in Gawler. Then we had the Mountain Bike Club in Gawler and all of these events and so forth. People didn't want to commit to a monthly meeting or to a monthly event or whatever. So, because everybody's life is different and busy. You know, I've never heard of anybody say that every day I get out of bed and I've got nothing to do. Well, they haven't got a life, and sadly, you know, this is one way that everybody can have a life by being involved with something, but in the way they want to be involved, you know, sort of thing.
This interview, recorded in the year 2017 by the Gawler Community Broadcasting Association, is available for download for purposes of educational research. We expect that any creative written or electronic work derived from the recording gives due credit to the interviewee, interviewer, and GBA.